Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome into the San Francisco 49er Access Podcast. My name is Sterling Bennett, and today, the second straight victory Monday as the San Francisco 49ers, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 27-14, an overall trouncing of the Buccaneers. Got a little dicey late, but overall, a 13-point victory over the Bucs at Levi's Stadium this past Sunday. A rather bittersweet victory. We'll dive into how great Brock Purdy was today, or yesterday, excuse me. But we'll also dive into the news of Talanoa Hufanga suffering a torn ACL. How will this team go forward about replacing him, and who potentially could take his spot in the starting lineup. But if we're going to start the show today, if we're going to discuss the Niners' second straight victory, bringing them to 7-3 on the year after a Seahawks loss, advancing completely ahead of them in the NFC West standings, and hopefully tonight can gain a game on the Philadelphia Eagles, barring a loss in Monday night against the Kansas City Chiefs. But Brock Purdy in this game was literally, and I mean this, literally perfect. When we talk about how good Brock Purdy's been this year, I could arguably and honestly say that he, the past 2 weeks, this may be his best form we have seen so far. Against the Bucs, 21 for 25 through the air, 333 yards, 13.3 yards per attempt, 3 touchdowns, and a perfect 158 passer rating. Again, when people say how good Brock Purdy's been, now you can literally say he has been perfect at least once this season. It's the first time since 1989 where a Niner quarterback has had a perfect passer rating of 158.3. The past 2 weeks against the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Brock Purdy is 40 for 51, 629 yards, 6 touchdowns, no turnovers, 12.3 yards an attempt, and a rating of 157.3. Again, through 2 games, not perfect, but as perfect can be when you realize his 157.3 rating is the highest of any NFL quarterback over a 2-game start since QB starts were first tracked in 1950. What Brock Purdy has done in his career has been historic. It's been unprecedented, maybe outside the likes of a Kurt Warner or a Tom Brady. And what he's done the past 2 weeks against the Jaguars, a pretty stout defense, and the Bucs coming in one of the better defenses in the NFL, with many players still holding over from that Super Bowl winning team just a few years ago, he has been, again, basically perfect. We're talking top-tier elite, top 10, top 5 quarterback playing in this game against the Bucs. It was a stellar performance. We talked about coming into the game that the Bucs love to blitz, Todd Bowles being one of the heavier blitzing-led defenses in football. Against the blitz, against the Bucs, 13 of 16, 231 yards, 2 touchdowns, and again, a perfect passer rating of 158.3. So if you're going to blitz against them, we've learned you can't do that. If you want to play man coverage against them, well, when he's targeting Brandon Ayuk for 76-yard touchdown passes, you can't do that either. It's becoming a point to of how do defenses guard against Brock Purdy. I think we have to be honest here on a team that has Nick Bosa, Chase Young, this stellar defense that is stacked from almost every single level, an offense that has Debo and Kittle and McCaffrey, that at least the past 2 weeks, and if not the majority of the season, Brock Purdy has been this team's best player. In San Francisco, when's the last time you can say that? And when usually your quarterback is your best player with as many stars that this Niners team has, you then begin to have the MVP conversations. You then at least begin to have the elite quarterback conversations. We've already had those here. Again, it doesn't mean you forget about his three-game stretch against the Vikings and the Browns and the Bengals, where there were a handful of plays you point to and say, that can't happen. That's a reason as to, or part of the reason as to why they lost. But even in those games, throughout his struggles, we've seen Brock Purdy play outside of those, I don't know, seven plays. Excellent football. Amazing football where, yes, again, those plays aren't taken away, but seeing the entire picture, those look like blimps on the radar rather than exactly who he is as a quarterback. In fact, who he's been the past 2 weeks, if that's the best Brock Purdy you're going to get, that is a Super Bowl winning or caliber quarterback right there. And I think, well, yes, even if Brock Purdy plays worse against the Seahawks or plays a little worse than this against the Eagles, he's going to have this Niners team in position to win games. Yes, there are still areas to improve upon. The red zone offense has struggled mightily. I discussed that coming into this game, that San Francisco's offense is going to have to find a way to score against the Bucs, who were coming into this game the best red zone defense. San Francisco 2-4 in the red zone on this game. Brock Purdy 2 touchdowns in the red zone against this Buccaneers defense in this game. So really, there really is no area of concern from Brock Purdy. The arm strength, that was a massive question coming into the year of, could the arm hold up? Could the UCL injury affect how far he can throw, how fast he can throw, knowing coming into his NFL career that there were already questions about his arm strength. We saw Brock Purdy fling that thing downfield about 45 yards to Brandon Ayuk and let him do the rest for a 76-yard touchdown pass. His second game in a row with a, 69 against the Jaguars to Kittle, 76 against the Bucs this past Sunday. So back-to-back games, nearly 2 70-yard touchdown passes, and for, 30 minutes, it was the longest touchdown pass of any quarterback to a receiver this season. Brock Purdy's doing the darn thing, folks. He's doing things that, or every question mark we had is, you know, being checked off almost every single game. To just give you some more, or how great he's been via the deep ball, on passes 20-plus yards or 20-plus air yards downfield this year, Brock Purdy is first in the NFL in completion percentage, and the only quarterback behind him is 5% below him at number two. He's third in yards at 633. He's second in 21.1 air yards an attempt. He's tied for ninth with 4 touchdowns and has the lowest off-target rate. What I mean by that is he has the best comp percentage and the lowest off-target rate. Brock Purdy is the most accurate quarterback when it comes to down-the-field throws over 20-plus yards. That's incredible. For a quarterback that was said didn't have a great arm, didn't have a strongest arm, Brock Purdy this year is the best and most accurate quarterback on passes 20-plus air yards down the field. Among qualifying quarterbacks, Brock Purdy has the highest completion percentage, 70.2%, the highest average yards per attempt, 9.7 yards. He is tied with Justin Fields, of all people, which, come on, Bears, beat the Lions, help the Niners out, please. How do you lose that game late? I digress. He's tied with Justin Fields at a 6.5% touchdown percentage, has the highest QBR at 77.1, and here's the kicker. San Francisco, whether it was with Jimmy G or hoping it was with Trey Lance, they've been looking for a quarterback that can take this offense to the next level, that they can take this offense from an intermediate game to a ground and pound offense, intermediate passing game based off timing, then also with deep balls down the field. From 2017 to 2022, Jimmy G was 6 of 40. 6 of 40. That's worse than one completion every 6 attempts. Basically, 1 in 7. That's awful. With 2 touchdowns and 6 picks on balls traveling 30-plus air yards downfield. In 10 games this year, Brock Purdy is 5 of 9 with 2 touchdowns and no picks on throws 30-plus air yards downfield. I'm telling you, what we are seeing from Brock Purdy is elite-level stuff. If you don't want to call him elite, that's fine. What we're seeing on the field, what his stats indicate, what his play has shown us is elite-level play. And we do have a comment here on the YouTube chat by Bobo, not Brock Purdy related, but it does say, what is frustrating to me is Kyle's overuse of CMC. Is Mason or Mitchell that terrible where they can't even close the game out? Bobo continues here, 4th and 1 late in the game. Mason can't get 1 yard to shut the door on the Bucs. We'll dive into that a little bit later, but I'll hit on it here, Bobo. I would agree with you. And it's funny enough, Kyle Shanahan kind of answered this question that Mitchell is this team's number 2 running back. We did see a drive in this game where there was a quote-unquote Elijah Mitchell drive. He had like 5-4 carries in a row, and he was being part of the offense for, it felt like, the first time in a while. I am a proponent of getting Jordan Mason more carries. I would agree with you, Bobo, and thank you for chiming in here. But I don't know. I don't understand. Well, I'll rephrase that. I understand the question marks about CMC's usage. I thought they were more careful in regards to using him in this game than others in the past. But that being said, the CMC is one of the best short yardage backs in the entire league. I get wanting to use him to ice the game out, but a bigger bodied running back in Jordan Mason, you would expect a 230-240 pound running back to get you at least 1 yard just falling forward. I don't know why that isn't Mason. It wouldn't be Mitchell. I understand CMC and Mitchell are this team's best outside zone running backs, but you want to run some inside zone, you want to utilize the ground and pound game, whether it's 3rd and 2 or 3rd and 1. Give me a bigger body player. I understand what you're saying, Bobo, but in this game, in Kyle Shanahan's mind, I can see how he justifies not using Jordan Mason. It's a complaint I've had, or very small nitpick I've had of the offense, who again is putting up almost 30 points a game again. But yes, you are correct. And I also wouldn't be surprised, kind of like last year, where we did see Jordan Mason close out the NFC West Championship game over the Seahawks in Seattle Thursday in prime time last year. Maybe there's a chance we see it this year again. I certainly wouldn't mind that, but I see your complaint. It's a gripe that many people have. It's a reason why Shanahan was asked about it this past week and kind of gave a snarky answer of, well, Jordan Mason's this team's 3rd best running back. I would disagree, but I ain't calling the shots. So I get your complaint, but I do want to dive back into Brock Purdy here, because Brock Purdy again.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
He had 4 incompletions. I can only think of 2. One was a throw out of the back of the end zone to make sure, or not force a pass, which in itself is a smart quarterback move that hadn't happened in San Francisco under the Jimmy G era very much. The other one was to George Kittle, where the defender's all over his back. Other than that, I cannot think of 2 incompletions in this game where I sat back and said, bad throw, that's a bad throw, can't make that. There were some against the Jaguars. There were a handful, obviously, against the Bucks, or the Bengals and the Vikings, excuse me. But in this game, it felt as if Brock Purdy, again, was literally perfect. There is no longer, and really hasn't been for a while, a concern of when he drops back, what's going to happen, where the ball goes. And we've also seen that Shanahan also feels that way of, I have no concern about Brock Purdy at all. Where in this game, San Francisco opened up their first drive of the game, end around, Purdy to Kittle, an incompletion to Debo. I guess there's one incompletion there. Then Purdy evades pressure and finds CMC. Then Purdy sacked. They had one end around and four straight passes. Not a great first drive, but we are seeing then the second drive, you have a PA to Debo, so five straight plays with Purdy passing the football. Then you have the first run of the game, seven plays into San Francisco's offensive drives, right? So two drives, seven plays in, and that was the longest time it took to get to a Christian McCaffrey run this year. At the 9 minute and 58 second mark, that's the longest time it has taken, the latest into a game CMC's had his first carry. What does that tell you? That, well, yes, the game plan, the scheme of trying to beat the Bucs was, we're going to pass the ball against a zone defense, which makes a ton of sense, knowing how good you have it in Debo and Kittle and Ayuk and McCaffrey, but also, there is no longer this fear of come playoff time when we're playing the Vikings or the Packers, whoever it is, that our quarterback's going to shrink and I can't trust him. And when you don't have that, when you don't have this hesitation or trepidation or just worry that we may not be able to trust our quarterback, you are going to have so much more success come playoff time. Now, we'll see San Francisco play in Seattle this Thursday, then in Philadelphia in two Sundays. Then we'll see them back home against Seattle on Sunday again. A very tough stretch of the year. Can Brock Purdy continue that? But the odds of Purdy playing well against the Jaguars, the Bucks, which I can argue are much better defenses than the Seahawks, the odds of him carrying it over are high. Like, we are seeing Brock Purdy and really this team play their best stretch of football at almost the perfect time. Now, again, we'll see on Thursday how this works itself out, but this team is hitting their stretch at the perfect time. And I want to dive into a very small thing here, the impact it's had on the offense. Again, sticking with Brock Purdy for a second. For the second straight week, we have almost seen Brock Purdy make identical throws. Against the Jaguars, it was the touchdown pass to George Kittle to open up the half, where he is almost about to get taken down and the pocket is collapsing. Steps up, makes the throw with pressure in his face, boom, touchdown Kittle. Almost the exact same kind of play in this game, albeit didn't result in a touchdown. But Brock Purdy makes a gigantic big-time throw, Vita Vea at his feet, and it's almost like Brock Purdy is just saying, I have to make this throw. There is no fear in me that I can't make it. It's something that when you watch Brock Purdy, you just say, yeah, he's a gamer. Yeah, like what Brock Purdy does, you can tell. There's a reason why this team buys into him. And my co-host on 95.7 The Game's Overtime, Mark Grandy, brought up a great point that this Niners team is reaching Jimmy G levels of love for Brock Purdy. And what he meant by that was, you know, the Niners roster, Juszczyk, Kittle, those guys, and many others, really didn't buy into the idea of acquiring Trey Lance and drafting him and bringing him in here, knowing you had Jimmy G on the roster, who was one of the boys. And that may have, I don't want to say, you know, frayed the locker room or split it, but there at least was some concern of like, what are we doing here? What's the plan here? And they were so tied to Jimmy G as a player, as a teammate, as a person, as a quarterback, they didn't buy into Lance. There was hesitation to buy into Lance. That's not even a conversation now. One, because Lance and Garoppolo are gone, but because they bought in to Brock Purdy, this team will have no other quarterback play and start for them unless it is indeed Brock Purdy. And I think getting a player like Kittle to buy in, last year we saw the impact that Purdy had on Kittle's, whether it's fantasy points or his pass-catching performance. In 76 games prior to Brock Purdy, George Kittle had 24 touchdowns. Since Brock Purdy took over as starter in 16 games, George Kittle has 12 touchdowns. So George Kittle, already has half the amount of touchdowns he had prior to Brock Purdy in 60 more games than he had then. Like, what Brock Purdy's doing is he's opening up the offense, he's utilizing this team's playmakers, and he's finally, I mean, we already know this, he is opening up, unlocking Kyle Shanahan's playbook. It's almost as if San Francisco has their perfect quarterback, right? Of course you want the Mahomeses who have the gigantic arms that can evade pressure and do just incredible things where you're like, that was a Madden-level throw. How'd he do that? Of course you would like a Jalen Hurts who can do certain things with his legs and makes the offense that much more dynamic. But what Brock Purdy's been able to do has been the best of both worlds. He's over-the-middle accurate. He does what Shanahan's offense is designed to do. Hand the ball off, work and play action, and again, be phenomenal, be accurate and decisive and on target over the middle, but he's also able to do what they wished Trey Lance was able to be, which is a deep threat with the football. Again, of plays over 20-plus yards on passes, 20-plus air yards down the field, first in completion percentage, third in yards, second in air yards per attempt, tied for ninth in touchdowns, and 23% .3 off target rate is the lowest in football. He is the most accurate deep ball thrower in the entire NFL. I'll repeat, not Mahomes, not Josh Allen, not Joe Burrow, who's hurt, unfortunately, not Lamar Jackson. Brock Purdy is the most accurate deep ball thrower in the entire NFL. This team has finally reached its next level. We thought that through the first 5 weeks. They lost three games in a row. Ever since Brock Purdy went out to those magic cornfields in Iowa and found his groove again, and, you know, Stella got her groove back, Brock Purdy got his groove back, and he has been playing perfect football since then. Moving down the pecking order here again, George Kittle, 8 catches, 89 yards, 1 touchdown. He was in his bag. Those back of the end zone touchdown throws feel like Kittle's bread and butter, where you're just like, man, like, he seems to always be open there, whether it's against the Raiders in this game, against the Bucks, or even in the playoff game against the Rams in 2021. Kittle always seems to be opened in the back of the end zone, whether he's double covered, triple covered, or uncovered. He always seems to be open back there and is, again, Brock Purdy's favorite target comes to getting touchdowns. The other, which, honestly, Brandon Ayuk's season has kind of been this back and forth of, begins it with an amazing day in Pittsburgh, what, 2 touchdowns on the day, and just doing things, you're like, this guy is ready to get paid, he's on a mission, and ready to take the league by storm, and they're going to have to pay him a pretty buck, and maybe even have to decide, you know, are they going to have to let somebody else leave to retain what is, or looks like to becoming, one of the better 1-2 receiving punches in football with Debo and Ayuk. Went through a lull there at the same time everybody else kind of did without Debo and Trent, which I do think hurt his stock somewhat. But what Ayuk has done the past 2 weeks, especially in this game, I mean, he basically broke Jamel Dean's ankle on the deep ball. Now, I hope Dean's healthy. I hope he can get healthy, whatever it is. Like, this man basically broke a dude's ankles on a deep ball when he cut back over the middle. Like, what Ayuk can do coming into the game, I mentioned it, what and how great Ayuk is able to be utilized in and against zone coverages, his separation. The broadcaster Greg Olsen said on Sunday that he's just now learning to run routes better. No, Brandon Ayuk has been doing this for a year and a half. Sure, more crisper. Sure, maybe his best year. What Brandon Ayuk is doing and has done over the last year or so is the best separator in football, and it's not even close. We are talking about someone who, whether it's Darius Slay against the Eagles, Trevon Diggs against the Cowboys, you can match him up against some of the best cornerbacks in football, and I can almost guarantee you he is going to be open. That's how explosive he is. That's how just the attention to detail on his route running is, it's incredible. There really isn't many other words to use to describe Ayuk's year other than incredible. In this game alone, 5 catches, 156 yards, obviously a massive 76-yard touchdown catch, 1 touchdown, and here's the kicker, 31.2 yards a catch. Now, obviously helped by 76 yards in one play, but it feels as if, well, yes, he's catching balls for an average of 31 yards. It feels like he constantly has 5-6 yards of separation. One of the big knocks on Brock Purdy has been, well, guys are always open. Yeah, because Brandon Ayuk is always open. He's always somehow, whether it's in a levels concept, on a post route, on a quick slant, he always is able to find space for Brock Purdy to get the ball to him. And it's almost as if Brandon Ayuk, well, yes, is a receiver, well, yes, can get downfield, can do go balls, can go deep and whatnot. Because he gets so open, he's almost like this team's or another security blanket, because he's all, you know, he's always going to be there, always going to be open. And this team also has the best checkdown player in football in Christian McCaffrey. But it feels as if because Ayuk's always open downfield 10, 15 yards, that in a way, in a weird twisted way, he's kind of like a checkdown because he's always open. Like, there isn't a fear of, oh, no one's going to be open downfield. It happened once against the Bucs in the first drive. After that, wasn't an issue. Brandon Ayuk, in a way, is almost like one of the best check down receivers in football. Not because he's sitting there 5 yards out or 3 yards out waiting for the ball with no one around him. Because he's beating his men over and over and over again by 5-6 yards, giving a Purdy so much space to work with. The past couple games for the entire offense, we've seen them get everybody involved, it feels like, in this game. Ayuk, 5 catches. Kittle, 8 catches. Debo, 3 catches. McCaffrey, 5 catches. It feels as if this offense is just rolling on all cylinders. Obviously, a massive game against the Jaguars last week, and a big game against the Bucs this week. I believe over the course of the past 2 weeks, again, Purdy has 6 touchdown passes. He's thrown 2 to Kittle, 2 to Ayuk, 1 to CMC, and 1 to Debo Samuel. So that's Juice, Kittle, Ayuk, and CMC. Of his 6 touchdowns, 4 of them have gone to separate receivers or players. And in this game, all 3 of his touchdowns gone to 3 different players. Like, the ball is being spread around the best it arguably ever has. And in this game, it was almost as if they didn't really need Debo Samuel's 4 touches for 63 yards, 62 yards, which in itself is a good Debo game. Had a 40-yard catch in this game. And it's like, hey, save him for Seattle, right? You know, get other guys involved. And it feels like that they're getting everybody involved. And to kind of send that point home even further, let's go over the paces for some Niners skill players, courtesy of Nick Wagner of ESPN. Christian McCaffrey this year is on pace for 2,021 scrimmage yards and a whopping 24 touchdowns. Brandon Ayuk on pace for 1,477 receiving yards and 7 touchdowns. George Kittle, 1,102 receiving yards and 9 touchdowns. And Debo Samuel, 972 scrimmage yards and 5 touchdowns. If I can do some quick math here, you do Kittle and Debo's 14 touchdowns, McCaffrey's 24 touchdowns, that's 38 touchdowns plus Ayuk's 7. What is that? 45 touchdowns in 4 players.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That's incredible. That's almost averaging 11 per player. Now, again, it's not how it works in football, but that shows you how much firepower this offense has. And we knew it on paper, We are finally seeing that come to fruition in weeks 10 and 11 of the NFL season. Again, Ayuk was great in this game. I do think that just offensively, it felt as if all cylinders were being hit. Ayuk was blocking on a handful of plays. Purdy was scrambling and doing his thing again, diving for first downs. It felt like whenever they needed a massive or a big third down play, Purdy and Ayuk hooked up in this game alone for San Francisco. Again, it felt like Ayuk and Purdy were just two players molded as one, kind of like how Shanahan and Purdy feel like a head coach and quarterback molded as one, because they were on the exact same page over and over and over again. And again, the Niners in this game winning 27-14 on third downs, while in a weird way, only 4-for-10 compared to the Bucks 7-for-14, and we'll get to the defense in a second here. The 4-for-10 feels very much skewed by the late game, just give it to CMC, hope you ice it out. Because this offense early was sustaining drives. Again, they had 420 yards total. We're averaging 7.1 yards per play, 10.5 yards per pass on the ground, 115 yards again in the red zone. They were 50%, 2-for-4. They were just doing the darn thing at every single level. Had 14 passing first downs, only 7 rushing first downs. Again, this passing offense has taken what was already a B-plus passing offense. They're now at the A-plus. They're now at the A. They have reached that next level of performance, and it's led by Brock Purdy and Brandon Ayuk just being awesome. Again, there really isn't much to say about the offense because they literally were perfect. And I was telling, again, my co-host Mark Grandy on 95.7 The Game, like, is this how, like, the Chiefs feel when Mahomes is doing his thing? And you're like, what do we say other than he is Patrick Mahomes? At what point, and I get it's early, there's a long way to go in the year, at what point do we just say, yeah, that's Brock Purdy? Like, how much can you just say Purdy was literally perfect and just go leave it at that? Because that's what he was in this game. He had a perfect passer rating overall and a perfect passer rating to George Kittle. He was almost perfect downfield in this game. And again, the most accurate deep ball thrower in the entire NFL. Had someone told you Brock Purdy was going to be that guy, we'd all say, there's no way. Amongst myself and others, go back last year. When San Francisco cut Nate Sudfeld, after they gave him guaranteed money to keep Brock Purdy, we all said, what are we doing? Like, that's weird. Yeah, backup quarterback, whatever. Well, everyone kind of said, like, like, that's an odd choice to give someone guaranteed money and then cut him for Brock Purdy. That should have been the first sign of this kid has something else. And now, obviously, almost now or a little over a full year into his tenure, it's so obvious this kid, Brock Purdy, has so much more to offer. And again, because he's so young, maybe there are other levels to go. And if this is it, if this is the highest Purdy ever goes when it comes to performance on the field, well, it's literally perfect. Like, I'm cool with that. If you're not cool with that, I don't know what crack or drug you are smoking, because if you're not cool with that, you need to get yourself checked out, because if you're not good with perfect, if you're criticizing literally perfect, then the standards for quarterback play for you are unattainable, because Brock Purdy was literally perfect in this game. Let's go to the defensive side of things for a second here, because I do think when you look at the game as a whole, there may have been more cause for concern on defense rather than offense. I thought the O-line for San Francisco held up pretty well in this game. Only 3 sacks given up, and a couple of those weren't really the offensive line's fault. Purdy scrambled or tried to scramble one time, then got sacked. That's not the offensive line's fault. I do think that the defense, though, was, if they're going to complain about anything, which hard to do, would be the defense. The biggest one, the biggest, you know, blemish on this win being Talanoa Hufanga's loss, or his torn ACL suffered which was confirmed this morning. It just sucks to see a young player coming off an all-pro season, a Pro Bowl season, not having a great year this year, but you can tell things are starting to pick itself up. The strides are starting to be reached, and you know, we're starting to see him, you know, pick his game up again as to who he was last year, and all of a sudden it's gone in a flash. You could tell on the play that the knee didn't look pretty. You could tell something snapped in there. Thankfully, though, despite what is again going to be a season-ending torn ACL in his right knee, it's only an ACL. There's no MCL. There's no other ligament damage, tendon damage outside of the ACL, and he is expected to be back by 2024 by week, which again, it's a massive loss. When you lose a player like Talanoa Hufanga, which it seems like from the moment he stepped on the field on the special teams unit his rookie season, he was making plays. I'm sure, you know, I look back and I think of it often. I'm sure you do as well. Jordan Willis and him combined for the block punt touchdown against the Packers. Like, he was making plays when he wasn't even a starting caliber player just yet. And when you move off of Jaquiski Tartt, who was pretty good safety here in San Francisco for almost a decade, those are some, I don't want to say big shoes, but there are some shoes to fill there. And he took those with flying colors and just ran away with them last year and was great. When you lose a player like Hufanga on the back end, a playmaking starting safety, 7 career interceptions in his again entire career, had 3 of them this year, had 1 against the Jaguars last week, 2 career forced fumbles, 7 career tackle for losses, 2 career sacks, averaging nearly 75 tackles a year since named starter. You're asking now your George Odoms, your now Jair Browns out of Penn State rookie this year, third round, to fill massive, game-changing, playmaking shoes. It's not going to be easy. I don't know exactly what this defense is going to do, if they're going to mix and match. Could we see Isaiah Oliver move to safety, a slower cornerback, lengthier when it comes to arms, maybe giving him more time to see the field, and a better tackler than most? Maybe that's an option, but I do think what we've seen in a very, very, very small sample size in this game alone, I would assume Jair Brown is going to be this team's starting free safety going forward, and then Tashaun Gibson moves to strong safety. I do think it's not going to be that cut and dry. I wouldn't be surprised if we do see some free safety sets, or we do see Odom and Jair Brown mix in, depending on the situation. But even Kyle Shanahan talked about that Jair Brown, the way he was practicing in recent weeks, it was as if, and I quote here, he was preparing for this. He felt like this was coming. Not the injury, but his moment to shine was coming. And we saw him in this game. While the first play, he was targeted for a 41-yard catch. Not pretty. When his back was against the wall, when you get a massive red zone pass deflection against Mike Evans, when you are trusted with Steve Wilks in this game at one point on the arguably biggest play the defense had late in this game, Mooney Ward gets the wind knocked out of him. Your starting cornerbacks on the field are Ambry Thomas, who's played much better as of recent, Diamador Lenore, who is now your starting nickel cornerback, moved back outside in this game. Isaiah Oliver comes on the field to be the team's nickel cornerback for one game. Then you have Jair Brown and Tashaun Gibson. You essentially have 3 rather unproven or just struggling at the time or moment cornerbacks on the field. You're just like, we hope this thing works out. What does Steve Wilks do? He was hammered by myself and others for blitzing at the wrong time against the Vikings. 0 blitz. Jordan Addison, massive touchdown before halftime. We all criticized him for it. May have been the main reason he moved from the booth to the sideline in this game. Steve Wilks, with Mooney Ward off the field, after Hufanga tears his ACL with Jair Brown, unproven, already been burnt once in this game, free safety, lined up against Mike Evans, one of the best and probably future Hall of Fame receivers in the game today. Lenore moved back outside, Ambry Thomas on the field still, and Isaiah Oliver, who had been benched coming out of the bye week, now on the field again. If there was a moment to not blitz, a moment to be worried and scared, it was that one. What does Steve Wilks do? He blitzes Oliver. He gets to Mayfield early, causes pressure, forces Mayfield to make a rushed pass to Evans. Jair Brown gets the pick on the play. We're talking about, well, to be fair, it hit Greenlaw's helmet, but massive, massive play for this defense. Steve Wilks dialing up the blitz at the right time. Jair Brown being trusted to make a play. And what does he do? Makes the biggest one of the game. The offense, I think, late in this game didn't really help the defense. It felt as if when there was time to ice the game and there was time to put this one away, they kind of just were like, "Yeah, we'll try." And it felt as if our defense was backed up against the red zone for 3-4 straight drives within a 6-minute span. You have a massive stop, they get the pick, then a 49-yard punt return, and you're like, okay, they're back at the 15 again, and the defense holds up one more time. Again, Jair Brown, massive pass deflection again. Funny enough, he plays the final, 8 minutes of the game, maybe the end of the third quarter, going into the fourth quarter. He led this team in pass deflections, Jair Brown did. Just an impressive day from a young player that hasn't got much playing time. And when you see him in college, you know that he has playmaking ability. The hope was that whether it was late this year or next year, you'd have a Hufanga Jair Brown safety tandem. And while that's still in the cards, hopefully, Jair Brown has to step up. And for at least one game, he got burnt once, but of three of the four plays he was involved in, he was great. Now, sure, there are some plays you can point to and say, okay, you know, where was he here? Where was he there? But when he was targeted, when he was around the ball, Jair Brown stepped up and filled those Talanoa Hufanga shoes. Jair Brown out of Penn State had a knack for getting interceptions in his, I would say, first extended play of his first NFL season, his rookie year. He already has a knack for getting takeaways and making plays on defense. I don't want to forget to mention Fred Warner here. Fred Warner was just, what do you have, 12 tackles in this game, had a forced fumble, had an interception. Fred Warner was great in this game again. The last couple weeks, he has turned things up another notch, as has the rest of the defense. No pick in this game, forced fumble, a massive play. Him and Bosa combined for the forced fumble, and again, get a massive takeaway for this team, where the Bucs were indeed marching downfield. They were doing the whole screen pass game, which was working again, which is a massive issue, I think, for this defense, especially against a quick game offense like Seattle, like the Eagles, who you know they have Devontae Smith, DeAndre Swift, and A.J. Brown. This is a massive issue that they have to clean up. Thankfully, like I hoped for and predicted, this defense went from 7 missed tackles against the Jaguars, over 30 the past 3 weeks prior to the Jaguars game, to just 4. I was hoping 5. They just missed 4. If teams are going to screen and dink and dunk you, you have to tackle. This team did that. But back to Fred Warner. Fred Warner in this game for the Niners, 12 total tackles, 2 pass deflections, a half a sack. And on the year, Fred Warner now has 3 interceptions and 3 forced fumbles. He's on pace for a career high in tackles, tackles for loss, forced fumbles, passes defended, sacks, and interceptions. All-pro Fred is playing at an all-pro high. Sure, there were certain games this year you point to and say, Fred's not looking like Fred. the past few weeks, and I think the stats would show this by a wide margin, he's looked like All-Pro Fred and above. He has taken his game when this team needed the defense the most against the Jaguars and against the Bucks. This defense, which he even said this, they hadn't really had a grinded out type of win. They've been beating teams by 20 plus, Cowboys 32 plus, 31 plus against the Jaguars in this game, 13 points. They had said that their mental toughness was being tested and they hadn't had that grinded out, this kind of grimy style of win. Well, yes, you win by two scores, or almost three scores, really. This was that grinded out back against the wall. Things are getting tight and close late. This game could look a lot different if the Buccaneers score in the red zone with 6 minutes left and it's a one score game. The offense punts. Maybe things are called differently, but still, this defense, I think, needed this kind of win. The offense kind of needed this kind of win where it was like, yeah, really successful. But this game is closer than I think the box score would indicate, the stats would indicate. But I do think it's going to help this team in the long run. You hate losing Hufanga. You hate to be in that situation. But now you know, hey, we can still do this. We can boat race teams and we can grind these kind of wins out. Almost had it against Cleveland. Almost had it against the Vikings. You get it here against the Buccaneers. But All-Pro Fred, this an amazing year so far. Past 2 weeks have been incredible. Getting takeaways, forcing fumbles. Again, career high in tackles, TFLs, forced fumbles, passes defended, sacks, and INTs. I want to hit on Ambry Thomas in this game. He was asked to come off the bench after the bye week, and he has been great. Against Mike Evans, the Chris Godwins. Chris Godwin didn't catch a ball until the second half in this game. Chris Godwin, one of the better number two receivers, could be a handful of teams' number ones, didn't catch a ball until the 13-minute mark in the third quarter. That's kudos to Lenore, Mooney Ward, Ambry Thomas. The secondary has stepped up its game. Lenore, same thing. Mooney Ward had an interesting stretch where he was targeted a handful of times on quick outs and comebacks late in the game. They had that soft zone again. The Bucs were playing into that and kind of eating it up. Then things tightened up again and the defense made plays. I'm not worried about him. The secondary has come to play the past 2 weeks, but what has certainly helped this team is the defensive line led, and I mean this, led by Arik Armstead. While Nick Bosa had a really good game for the Niners in this one, what Nick Bosa had, three tackles, had one sack, had three quarterback hits. Javonna Hargrave, again, another good game, four tackles, two solo tackles, had a handful of pressures. Chase Young had five pressures in this game and was getting to the quarterback a handful of times. Got to the quarterback on one of the biggest plays, had a sack himself and a big tackle for loss. The guys you expect to get there are getting it done again. Hargrave, Bosa, and Chase Young. But Arik Armstead, he is almost leading the darn thing. Arik Armstead had 12 pressures against the Bucs on Sunday. Maybe the best game, or certainly the best game of his season so far. Maybe one of the best games of his career. 12 pressures, a career high, two quarterback hits, one sack, a tackle for loss, and an 83.6 PFF grade. Arik Armstead yesterday was maybe outside of Fred Warner the best defensive player on the field. I'm not kidding. Arik Armstead, the past month, has really shown to be worth the money. I get you lose against the Bengals big, you just get outplayed. That's fine. The last three games, the Bucs, the Jaguars, and the Bengals, Arik Armstead has 17 total pressures, 3.5 sacks, 5 quarterback hits, and 3 tackles for losses. And average 5 pressures, over 1 sack a game, over 1 quarterback hit per game, and 1 tackle, earning that paycheck, and it's helping the defensive line around him, whether it's Hargrave or Bosa or Chase Young. Even Javon Kinlaw was good in this game against the run, making a handful of plays. It feels as if this defensive line, again, while they found themselves against the Jaguars, like I said, coming into this week, if that was your get right game, this was going to be your stay right game. And folks, they stayed right. Nick Bosa had 9 pressures, had a sack himself, and they were getting to Baker Mayfield all day long. 38 total pressures combined on Baker Mayfield, a season high for this Niners defense, which made sense. The line for this game was 13.5. Didn't hit that, easily could have. Didn't hit that, but this defense, they showed why it was 13.5. The offense did as well, but the defense, it felt like Baker Mayfield was under pressure almost every single dropback. And to be honest with you here, Baker Mayfield had 45 attempts through the air. He was sacked 4 times. So 49 total attempts, right? Including sacks, okay? Pressured 38 times. That's incredible. Only 10 plays of him passing the football or trying to pass the ball resulted in not a pressure. And it was probably the 5 screen passes they ran in a row and a handful down the stretch. Like, this defense was getting to the quarterback all day long. You felt as if Baker Mayfield could have had like 7 picks in this game. Greenlaw dropped one. Greenlaw had one hit his helmet because he was trying to kill the receiver coming out of his break instead of looking for the ball. Gibson dropped one in the end zone. There was a handful of plays in this game that SF could have had 4 or 5 takeaways, and Baker lucked out, but it felt like his quote-unquote turnover-worthy plays were like 10. There were so many plays in this game where you said, wow, that could have been another Niner takeaway. This defense is playing great. I don't know how much of that is Steve Wilks being on the sideline. I would assume not too much, but you hear the players discuss how important he's been to the growth and the change and the spark the defense have had. And again, you just needed players to make plays, and it felt like everybody on offense made plays and everybody on defense made plays. Cleveland Farrell's making plays. What, 2 fumble recoveries the past 2 games? I mean, come on. they got the scoop and score guy ready to go, right? Like, even Cleveland Farrell's making plays. D. Winters almost got flagged for a massive hit in this game, but you're like, I want to see these guys make plays, and San Francisco's defense was making plays. Led to a 27-14 victory over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 7-3 on the year, and there really isn't much more to say. This team is riding high, coming in to a short week where Purdy's playing perfect, your defense is playing great, getting takeaways, Bosa being relentless to get Baker Mayfield. You can tell he just loves playing against him, he hates him, and he even said that Baker Mayfield was, and I quote, bitching at the refs, and Bosa goes to him and say, there's no horse collar in the pocket, man. Deal with it. You can tell this defense has found its groove back. They're out there shrugging. They're making boxes and kicking them down. They're getting picks off. They're doing their thing. And they're riding high, playing their best football at the right time. I believe the record is now 10-2 in November games for Kyle Shanahan in 2019, 2021, and 2022, and this year. Massive games coming up against the Seahawks in Seattle on Thursday on Thanksgiving. Then you have Philadelphia. Then you have Seattle again. If you can at least beat Seattle twice, you are basically clinching the division. But who wouldn't love to see the Philadelphia Eagles lose tonight against the Chiefs? We beat them in 2 weeks in Philadelphia, inching closer to the number one seed. The hope is not dead yet, folks. We're almost there. Just got to keep taking care of business and keeping things straightforward in our own head. Jake Moody was good in this game, 2-for-2 on field goals, doing his thing. It felt as if it was going to come down to him, thankfully. But I'll tell you now, every single time you felt as if the game might get carried away, or you felt as if the defense might give up a touchdown. Things tightened up, the screws were tightened, and this defense and offense came to play. Short week again, Seattle on Thursday, on Thanksgiving, massive game. I'll be friggin' just grubbed out, stomach full of turkey and whatnot. Hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Stay tuned later this week, probably on Wednesday, for the preview podcast of that game on Thursday. A massive chance for San Francisco to take a 2-game lead over the Seahawks in the NFC West standings. And hopefully we're talking about maybe a little one seed action in a few weeks. Want to remind you to leave a like, share, and subscribe. It's a free, easy way to help the show. If you're listening on Apple Podcast or Spotify, if you could give us 5 stars and say whatever you want in the comments, I could care less. The 5 stars is what we care about. Tell me your prediction for this Thursday. Heck, tell me how you feel about this win down below. What'd you think of Purdy? How they schemed against Baker Mayfield? And really, what do you think and how they're going to move forward without Talanoa Hufanga? A massive loss for this defense. If you want to go to a game this year, use our promo code 49ersAccess, 49ersAccess at SeatGeek.com and save yourself $20 off your first purchase. Follow us on social media at 49ers_Access is the Twitter or X, and 49ers.access is the Instagram for all the updates, the hot takes, my quick takeaways, my quick opinions on Niner related things. Those are the place to follow me. Want to shout out Randy Daytona in the comments before we go about, leave the podcast for the day. Randy says, Purdy is elite. Brown will shine. Purdy is definitely elite, Randy. And we'll see about Jair Brown hoping good things from the first year safety. With all that being said, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. My name is Sterling Bennett saying until next time, happy Thanksgiving. And as always, you have to stay faithful.